This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
The High Court granted an interim order which compels the police and the military to respect human rights and respect human dignity in the manner in which they enforce a lockdown. This is very important in light of a huge amount of police brutality that has been going on the last few weeks. Whether a High Court order will be sufficient to stop this from happening, you know, is another question, because it's always been illegal for the police and the military to mete out this kind of brutality.
That's Zimbabwe. And human rights lawyer Doug Coltart on a court order for police to cease violence against citizens while enforcing the coronavirus lockdown rules. Also, France says the G20 group has agreed to a partial moratorium on debt payments for developing countries, many of them from Africa. These stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. But first, here is our top story. Global agencies have been warning that the coronavirus pandemic may result in worldwide food shortages, and leaders warn African nations already struggling from the effects of natural disasters and conflicts could be among the worst hit. Nicolas Pinot reports from Paris.
Even before COVID-19 hit, 113 million people on the planet were already struggling with severe acute food insecurity due to pre-existing shocks and from natural disasters or crises. The worst examples are Ethiopia, Kenya, and Somalia, where the UN's food agency says 12 million people were already in dire circumstances due to the extended droughts, back-to-back failed harvests, and on top of it all, hordes of desert locusts that descended on crops and pastures between December and January. In an April report, the Food Crisis Prevention Network says conflicts have created food shortages and malnutrition in the Lake Chad Basin, the Liptako-Gourma region of Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso, and in parts of Nigeria. It says about 17 million people will face a food and nutrition crisis by June-August in the region. Isufu Bawa is an expert with the regional grouping, the Permanent Interstate Committee for Drought Control in the Sahel. He warns that 50 million people are currently stressed and in risk of falling into crisis.
Il s'agit en fait des populations qui sont à mesure de pouvoir assurer leur alimentation.
He explains to VOA that distressed populations can usually feed themselves, but cannot manage any other non-food spending. If someone gets sick, for example, they would need to sell some of their food stock, which they rely on to survive, to cover the cost. Then he says they are in trouble. The coronavirus pandemic and the measures to contain it are also a challenge. South Africa has extended a national lockdown by 2 weeks until the end of April, as infections continue to mount. Others impose curfews. Despite border closures and restrictions within countries, food must remain available, says Sekou Sangare, the Commissioner for Agriculture, Environment and Water Resources of the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. Sangare says the necessary lockdown measures should not prevent farmers from selling their products in the markets. Otherwise, he says, it would interrupt the food supply chain, create shortages, and increase the prices. Some NGOs warn that the remedy could become worse than the disease in countries with fragile economies. The effects of hunger could claim more victims than the virus itself, won the group Action Against Hunger. Dr. Pierre Micheletti is its president.
Le confinement signifie la fin de l'emploi.
Micheletti says lockdown measures mean the end of jobs for people who are trying to survive, mostly with informal jobs. He thinks the whole safety net system and monetary subsidies that developed countries can have are unrealistic in developing countries. Nicolas Pinault for VOA News, Paris.
France says the G20 group of industrialized nations have agreed to a partial moratorium on debt payments this year from the world's developing countries, many of them in Africa. But as Lisa Bryant reports for VOA from Paris, French President Emmanuel Macron wants to go further.
40 of the world's 76 low-income countries qualifying for debt repayment relief this year are in sub-Saharan Africa. French Economy Minister Bruno Le Maire said they could get a total $20 billion reprieve in debt servicing from private creditors and countries, including China. The International Monetary Fund announced Monday short-term debt relief for 25 developing countries, again mostly ones in Africa.
Nous devons aussi savoir aider nos voisins d'Afrique à lutter contre le virus.
But President Macron is ramping up the stakes. Addressing the nation Monday night, he said France and the European Union should help Africa fight coronavirus with a massive debt cancellation. Pope Francis made a similar call for developing nations. Africa still has a relatively small number of coronavirus cases, but experts fear that could change dramatically with potentially catastrophic consequences for a continent with a weak health infrastructure and where many live on the edge. Already, the United Nations predicts overall African growth will be cut in half this year. Last week, France pledged about $1.4 billion in coronavirus-related aid to Africa, while the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announced more than $16 billion in support for developing nations. In both cases, the money simply reshuffled existing funds.
Africa could experience the same problems that we are facing in Europe in a matter of weeks. They need our help to slow down the spread of the virus as we needed help in this crisis.
African countries want more. Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, for example, is urging G20 leaders to provide not only debt relief, but also $150 billion in emergency funds for the continent to battle coronavirus. Laurent Bossard, Sahel and West Africa Club Director for the Paris-based Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, thinks nations with the most advanced economies must think long-term as they craft massive rescue packages for themselves.
We are talking about thousands of billions. And I'm wondering if these packages could or should, surely should, imperatively include means, financial means, to rebuild the African economy.
That may be a challenge as many industrialized nations face their biggest economic slump in decades. But experts say leaving Africa and other poor countries out of rescue efforts could carry both health and economic consequences down the road. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Zimbabwe's High Court has ordered police to cease violence against citizens while enforcing coronavirus lockdown rules. Adigando gives us more on the story.
Responding to an urgent application by the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights, ZLHR, on behalf of 26-year-old Lucia Mashondo, the High Court ordered police, army, and other security agents to uphold human rights while enforcing the lockdown. Mashondo says that while she was cooking outside her house over a fire, police set dogs on her and beat her with truncheons. The court heard that the police were not wearing protective equipment, which also would violate the lockdown regulations. Social media has been circulating videos of police using heavy-handed tactics and violence against citizens. Human rights lawyer Doug Coltart says the court order is very important.
The High Court granted an interim order which compels the police and the military to respect human rights and respect human dignity in the manner in which they enforce the lockdown. This is very important in light of a huge amount of police brutality that has been going on the last few weeks. Whether a High Court order will be sufficient to stop this from happening, you know, is another question, because it's always been illegal for the police and the military to mete out this kind of brutality. You don't need the High Court to tell that, but sometimes the authority of a court can assist in building restraint among our police officers and soldiers. So we remain to see how that's implemented.
The application named several government ministers as respondents. Coltart says presiding judges Justice Msakwa and Tagu say they would rule on whether the lockdown regulations are in compliance with the constitution. Observers say government needs to understand its security agents are not immune to infection by COVID-19, and that there is also need to address the factors motivating citizens to defy orders. Political analyst Effie Ncube agrees, adding that citizens are not only fighting the pandemic, they are fighting hunger.
This is not an issue that needs an AK-47, that needs a machine gun. You don't need tanks, you don't need soldiers, you don't need the police. You need consensus, you need understanding, you need awareness. You need to have a conversation, a civilized conversation with the nation. It is important that we make it a point that as we have this lockdown, we provide the people with all the necessary tools, the necessary basic commodities and services to stay at home. You don't just order people to stay at home. The reason why they are defying the orders is because they are facing a death or life or death situation at home. They do not have mealie-meal. They do not have water. They do not have basic commodities that they need to survive, to raise their children.
Who maintains that the lockdown regulations, such as social distancing, will falter because citizens have to queue for mealie-meal and other basic commodities, and heavy-handed tactics only serve to compound the issue.
As long as government thinks that it can do this on its own, ignoring the feelings of the citizens, the interests of the citizens, and the lack of basic commodities that they are facing, then we are not going to succeed. People are starving. People are without income. It is not true that we have to suspend justice, suspend respect for human rights, suspend the rule of law in order to succeed in our wars, to succeed in containing diseases.
The High Court also ordered the Minister of Health to provide protective wear for doctors fighting the virus. Zimbabwe Doctors for Human Rights sought the action last week. Observers say the country is sitting on a time bomb, where the populace faced with hunger due to a prolonged drought and economic meltdown. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
A broad humanitarian appeal from UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres and a tailored request from U.S. Ambassador Richard Norland to stop fighting in Libya have so far fallen on deaf ears. Experts say Libya is known to have a degraded health system that would not be able to deal with a coronavirus outbreak, although there are at least common acceptance of the National Center for Disease Control in Tripoli. VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi spoke with Wolfgang Porstai, a security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations, about chances for a ceasefire and whether the spread of the coronavirus could achieve what years of international diplomacy failed to accomplish.
For the time being, both sides believe that they can use the situation to their advantage. Both think that the other side is already on the breaking point and they won't give him the time to recover. But if the number of infections increases significantly, and this is quite likely, and if it increases also and spreads among the fighters on both sides, it will be much more difficult for the war infections to stay in the fight. So I see a small chance for a local ceasefire in the greater Tripoli area when this is the case, just before the virus spreads entirely out of control. If this is already the case, then it's too late. This would allow for a coordination of efforts to contain the virus to the benefit of all. But let me say with regard to Guterres and Ambassador Norland, the demand for an all-encompassing ceasefire, a return to the UN peace plan, to the Shkirat Agreement, and the reopening of all the oil terminals, that's simply not realistic.
In a divided country with two governments, two central banks, and separate degraded health systems, there is at least a common acceptance of the National Center for Disease Control in Tripoli. How could the UN and the international community support this entity to become the focal point for all coronavirus cooperation between Western and Eastern Libya?
It must be empowered to set the standards and to work with both sides to contain the virus. And if you want, also with the free provinces of Libya. To this end, the international community should take the NCTC as the main, maybe as the only one counterpart, at least as the focal point for the international support for Libya, including financial support. Those blocking the oil terminals should be encouraged to allow for a limited export of oil to finance the fight against the virus. And the revenues from this should go directly to the NCDC, of course, under strict international supervision to ensure the appropriate spending. A common fight against the virus, a common enemy, would in this sense also serve as some kind of confidence-building measure.
Approximately 150,000 people are displaced by the fighting in Libya, many living in makeshift communal shelters ideal for virus spreading. By the time pandemic reaches the young, relatively isolated fighters on both sides, would it be too late for the vast majority of Libyan citizens who are now largely defenseless against the coronavirus?
Unfortunately, this could very well be the case. The Libyans are still way too optimistic on both sides of the country that there will be only a limited number of coronavirus cases. But I fear, based on all the experiences from other countries, they are wrong. The first infected arrived already on March 5 from Saudi Arabia, and he was only tested positive on March 24, almost 20 days later in Tripoli. It is very likely that he has infected many others before. Until Saturday, a total of only 492 corona tests were completed in Libya. That's 72 per million. In Egypt, there are 244 tests per million. Officially, there are only 24 confirmed cases, but keeping the very low number of tests in mind, it would be really a miracle if the Libyans would have detected all or at least the majority of the infection. I'm pretty sure, unfortunately, the virus has already spread almost all over the country.
Does Libya have the means to counter coronavirus outbreak? And what could the international community provide Libya with when every country is overwhelmed with its domestic outbreak?
Both sides have imposed curfews, which are not even in Tripoli, Misrata and Benghazi fully observed, but that's not really a difference to many other countries. They have partially closed shops, bars and restaurants. They have tried to fill up medical stocks and have tried to establish a few emergency hospitals for milder corona cases. But based on the experiences of other countries, these measures are by far not strict and far-reaching enough. Furthermore, the Libyan health system is not ready to provide a sufficient number of beds in the intensive care units if the number of serious and critical cases increases. Most of the key donor nations have huge problems on their own. But keeping the relatively small population of Libya in mind, already limited support could achieve a lot. However, the international community, they should help the Libyans to increase the number of tests. This is key to get a better picture about how many cases there are really in the various parts of Libya. Libya needs medical equipment and consumables, and it needs support to establish more beds in the intensive care units. All this must be solely done through the NCDC.
That was VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi speaking with Wolfgang Poshtai, a security analyst at the National Council on U.S.-Libya Relations. You are listening to Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehi Yisuhib in Washington. Here is a recap of our top stories. Global agencies are warning African nations could be among the worst hit by the coronavirus pandemic. And France says the G20 group has agreed to a partial moratorium on debt payments for developing countries, many of them from Africa. And for more news and information, visit our website at voanews.com. It's about 6 weeks since South Africa reported its first case of COVID-19. Health authorities say there are now more than 2,400 known infections and 27 confirmed deaths. These rates are extremely low when compared with other countries. While the South African government anticipates many more infections in the near future, it says its early measures against COVID-19 have so far dramatically slowed the spread of the virus. Darren Taylor reports from Johannesburg.
Professor Salim Abdul Karim is a world-renowned epidemiologist who chairs South Africa's Presidential Advisory Committee on COVID-19.
In the first 2 weeks of the epidemic, the rapidity with which the number of new cases increased was a bit concerning because it was faster than that which had been observed in most other countries. So we were anticipating that the virus was spreading quite rapidly.
Karim and his fellow scientists braced for a mass outbreak. Hospitals would have been overwhelmed. Many more would have died.
However, things changed. Just over a week ago, the number of new cases with COVID-19 started declining, and we've seen a steady decline ever since. So this expected exponential growth in the epidemic curve hasn't materialized.
As has happened around the world, except for Wuhan, China, where COVID-19 most likely originated, travelers brought the virus into South Africa. They then infected their immediate contacts, like family members, colleagues, and the nurses and doctors who treated them. Karim says it's this second viral wave that has spread COVID-19 extensively in other parts of the world.
When it hits the general population, that's when it spreads like wildfire. That's how you see this sharp curve.
But in South Africa, says the scientist, this has not happened.
We have a curve that sort of threatened to climb. It got to sort of base camp, and then it took a turn, and it decided to sort of hover around base camp, not giving any indication as to whether it's going to go to the peak or not.
Karim says this phenomenon makes South Africa's epidemic unique.
We're not sure whether it's just been pushed back a bit by the lockdown, whether that we're just not testing enough, and so we don't know what the real situation is, or whether it's an artifact of who we are testing. So there are many explanations for the odd shape of the South African curve, which doesn't follow what any other country has seen.
The government locked the nation down just 3 weeks after reporting its first case of COVID-19. Karim says there's evidence that this fast action has so far averted high infection and death rates. Health Minister Zweli Mkhize agrees.
The lockdown has slowed internal transmission by reducing the risk of spread through large gatherings, churches, football and festivals and so on, and also overcrowded transport routes such as trains, buses and taxis.
Mkhize says his government's rapid quarantining of inbound travelers and returning citizens has also helped, and it was also quick to shut its borders. They closed about a month ago when there were just more than 100 official infections, and 10 days before it reported its first death from the virus. Mkhize and Karim say they aren't claiming any kind of victory over COVID-19. But the state's immediate extreme measures to contain its spread have bought it time to prepare for a much more serious epidemic. I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg for VOA News.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And on behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, I'm Yehia Swahib in Washington, thanking you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.